In light of the increased activity recently on 6 and 10 meters, we now present this rain rerun from September 2006.
We'll begin in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is the Rain Report. I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN. The PropNet project is combining the best of amateur radio and the internet. The man behind this ad hoc network is Ev Tupis, W2EV. Rain's founder producer, Hap Holly, KEC9RP, recently spoke with Ev about this innovative project.
PropNet is one of those difficult things you can't really wrap your arms around until you actually take an opportunity to see it for yourself. At first glance, it is like a propagation beacon system, but yet it's so much more than that. In a very traditional sense, propagation beacons are CW-based. They are transmit only, and they're scattered all about the world, transmitting, waiting for people to happen across them, and hopefully mentally integrate that the band is open between them and that particular propagation beacon. PropNet takes that several steps forward. It is a transceiving system. It is ad hoc, does not require special equipment, anything more than what a typical PSK31 station might possibly already have in operation. It runs software on a Windows-based PC that periodically causes one station to automatically identify itself with not only its call sign and its location, but also it identifies or reveals how much power the station is putting out, what sort of antenna gain it might have associated with it, and how many times per hour the station auto IDs. So with all that information, it's pretty easy to determine when a band is open, where the band is open to, and the relative quality of the communication circuit. In addition to that, those stations who are internet-enabled will automatically report when they transmit on the air to a central internet data repository. Since it's a receive-also system, they will also report to internet when a station is heard. We call it a catch report. When a station is catched, if you will, by another station, it's not necessary for you to be sitting by the radio tuning in. All you really need to do is to hit an internet website, and you'll see all sorts of dots all over a map, each one corresponding to a PropNet participant, and vectors connecting those PropNet participants that are hearing each other at that point in time. The map itself is obviously graphical. To assist those who are visually impaired, below the map is a table of exactly the same information, call signs of stations who are reporting catches by other stations, the time that that catch took place, as well as, since this is all PSK31 based, it also includes an IMD report of that particular catch.
IMD standing for?
Intermodulation distortion. IMD is sort of the equivalent to PSK31 as an RST report is to traditional communications.
And this is, of course, at propnet.org. How do I get involved?
Getting involved is very, very straightforward. We really intended to make sure that it didn't require anything special. As long as an individual station has what it takes to get onto PSK31 as a communications mode, they have everything that they need in order to become a PropNetter or a PropNet participant. The software that we use is developed by a really brilliant guy out of Arizona, Jeff Steinkamp. N7YG wrote the software for us. You download it. It is free. You simply configure it for your station configuration and execute it. Tune to the PropNet frequencies. We have some very discrete frequencies on each band to make sure that everyone sort of gets on the same channel at the same time. And let the program do the rest for you. You can sit back and watch propagation unfold right before your eyes.
Or ears.
Or ears, as the case may be. In fact, there are features of the software program that our developers have put together that allow one to not only use it as a beaconing system, but also as a QSO alerting system. It is possible for someone to run across a PropNet signal and interrogate the PropNet station. Have that PropNet station then close a relay that will alert the operator to the fact that someone out there is trying to contact them, and then pop up a window allowing real-time keyboard communication. So in fact, it's more than just propagation monitoring, it's more communication enhancement. It actually allows individual operators to talk with each other when the band is open. You know the band is open because you're hearing the propagation, you're hearing those signals come through. It's almost like shooting fish in a barrel, if you will. There's no sense calling if the band isn't open. Allow your station to call for you, When the band is open, you can communicate, and it's sitting there locked and loaded, ready to go. At this point in time, it's primarily a North American phenomenon. The reason for that is because of international rules around unattended operation. In IARU Region 1, we're finding that most countries require the operator to be present at the station location in order to be transmitting. Rules are a little more relaxed in North America, so as a result, we have stations who are on 24/7, who are auto-IDing even in the middle of the night. Those same types of opportunities don't seem to exist in Region 1, so we have a much more fluid participation base around the world than we do in North America. As long as you're internet connected, even if the band is not open, you can go to propnet.org, click on a hyperlink, the map will come up, and you'll simply see dots on the map with call signs next to them, or you'll see the chart below with no vectors connected to other stations because, of course, no propagation is taking place. You can see at a small glance who is participating at this instant in time. It's just that, gee, there's no propagation to be had.
I'm speaking today with Alf Tufas, W2EV, the man behind propnet.org, P-R-O-P-N-E-T, propnet.org. We'll be right back. This is the Rain Report. How did all this come about?
It actually started way back in the early to middle 1980s or so, as Bob Bruninga, WB4APR, was developing the APRS system. I was an early adopter of that technology and quickly realized that on 2 meters, which is where the APRS network is primarily, it was easy to be able to identify band openings because stations would, again, graphically appear on a map when the band opened. That gave me the idea that perhaps this technology could be applied in different ways than perhaps Bob's vision was, as robust of a vision as Bob had and continues to have and continues to develop. On a propagation side of things, it seemed as though it was just a ripe for the picking. If we simply modified the protocol just a little bit, made it real easy, plug and play, and allowed people to go. And in fact, our roots and protocol are squarely in the APRS realm. We're really nothing special. We're standing on the shoulders of giants already, just happening to go off in a slightly different direction.
What bands will I currently find these interactive PSK-31 beacon stations operating?
The bands that are of primary interest at this point are 10 meters and 6 meters. And that's really because of where we are in the solar cycle. Most folks realize that if they're on 40 meters or 30 meters or 20 meters, they're going to have worldwide communication at one point or another. The real interesting stuff occurs at this point on 10 meters and on 6 meters. On 10 meters, you'll find PropNet activity at 28.131 upper sideband. On 6 meters, we're real close to the PSK-31 activity at transceiver frequency, 50.291 upper sideband. And as a result, people on 6 meters will find PropNet data streams in the very upper area of their PSK waterfall. So we're out of the way of any QSOs that are taking place, yet we still exist as visual propagation beacons, certainly to those individuals who have that capability.
So as we climb back out of the bottom of cycle 23, as it would appear that we are as of the summer of 2006, will there be more stations operating then on the lower HF bands?
I think so. Right now we have a critical mass issue. We're trying to amass a critical number of individuals on a per band basis rather than having individuals jump from one band to another. We're very, very close to having that that critical mass on 10 meters, certainly in North America. Although we also have participants regularly in the UK, and most recently, we've had a couple of folks in Oceania pop on board. The only reason we know that, it's not because we have propagation on 10 meters to those areas. It's because they're showing up on the PropNet internet map. So we know that they're out there. We also know that we simply don't have propagation to them yet.
What do you consider critical mass to be?
We've sort of divided up the North American continent into areas, and we're looking for at least one individual that we refer to as an anchor, who has said that I'm willing to commit 24/7 operation to PropNet, and then we assign them a status as an anchor. So, in fact, we have one in the Pacific Northwest. We're still looking for them across the northern Great Plains. We have them in the northeast. As we go across the middle of the country, we're actually pretty good across the center of the country, the central tier of states, east to west. And we are well represented across the southern tier of states. That's what leads me to say that we're pretty well set, at least for the United States. We're bridging out into trying to find Mexican stations. Canadian stations are coming on board now a little bit at a time as well. So we're doing actually pretty well there.
Of course, Ev is talking about approaching a critical mass of dedicated North American anchors. However, the PropNet project is in need of additional ham operators and even shortwave listeners. You'll learn more about this ad hoc network next time in the conclusion of Hap Holly KC9RP's interview with the man behind PropNet, Ev Tupis, W2EV. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2006 Rain, all rights reserved. Now for Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN, wishing all of you a very 73 from all of us at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network.